Shop the Sherwin-Williams Super Sale and get 40% off paints and stains September 19th through the 24th. With prices starting at $29.39, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
I'm a member of a Red Sox nation. It's a kind of a family. Wherever I roam, a Fenway home, that's where I long to be. I'm a member of a Red Sox nation. It's a kind of insanity. Yeah, I live and die with Red Sox pride for eternity. I fake a smile November until opening day. Suffering baseball withdrawal around the clock. When April comes, hey, meet me down on Yawkey Way. That's when Red Sox Nation starts to rock. I'm a member of a Red Sox.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Benny and the Bets podcast covering Boston Red Sox baseball. And tonight for episode 101, we will cover the Baseball Writer Awards of America, if I got that right. It's basically Rookie of the Year, MVP, Manager of the Year, Cy Young, all that. We will be discussing. For those of you staying up late on Periscope tonight, the podcast could be found on SoundCloud, iTunes, Spotify, Spreaker, Player FM, Stitcher. And for those of you who do listen on iTunes, if you want to help this podcast grow and play a part in that, if you could give us a rating, preferably 5 stars, and write a review, nothing else you do could help us more immensely. So we would definitely appreciate that. I am Terry Cushman, and I am joined as always by Jeremy Schilling and Liz Churchville. How are you?
No complaints yet.
Amazing.
All right.
Well, what, Liz, settle down. Come on. Don't have so much enthusiasm right off the jump, please.
It's been a long time. I've missed you guys.
Yeah. You go on vacation like every other week, so.
I mean, anniversary, girls' weekend. I got things. I'm sorry, but feels good to be back.
Yeah. Well, your life's more exciting than mine, and probably a lot of other people. So, so kind of a interesting week. You know, every year we kind of look forward to this. You know, once the season ends, and hopefully the Red Sox players are in contention for one of the awards, maybe the manager as well. So they certainly were this year. We had some finalists, and we will get right into that. And we will start with Manager of the Year. And I think we all kind of had a candidate in mind. Alex Cora, of course, was a finalist, 108 wins. Bob Melvin, you know, dramatic turnaround with the Oakland A's and got into the wild card with 97 wins. And then, of course, Kevin Cash just completely rewriting the script for managing outside the box using analytics and coming up with some new concepts. He got the Rays to 90 wins. They didn't make the playoffs, but it was an interesting journey. So let's start off with this question because our audience is mostly Red Sox. Jeremy, was Alex Cora robbed of Manager of the Year, as a lot of Red Sox fans are suggesting and protesting?
Yeah, no, he wasn't. So, and I'm going to elaborate on that, but just as a caveat, okay? I literally could care less about these personal awards. And that goes for all four sports that I follow, the four major North American sports. I don't care about the personal awards. I pay very little attention to them. But for the fact that we're doing this podcast, do I have some thoughts? Yes, I'm going to share them. And as I usually am, I'll probably be fairly opinionated on it. But do I care that Alex Cora lost? No. Who gives a shit? He won the World Series. And I would just say to Red Sox fans that are spending any time being upset about it, like, these awards don't do anything but make these players and coaches more valuable at contract time. And, you know, we're going to talk about Betts winning the AL MVP. My opinion on that is going to be it's going to cost the Red Sox more now. So getting specifically to your question, Terry, I do not think he was robbed. I think it's hard to give the number one or number two payroll in baseball the third time in a row they've won the American League East. And I know it's his first year, but it's not like he inherited a tough situation. There are, and I'm not saying it's easy, and I definitely think he's one of the top three managers. I would have it Melvin, Cash, or Cash, Melvin, then Cora. I think Cora is a good manager. I think he's potentially going to become, if he isn't already, an elite manager. But he was given a $200 million payroll on a team that's already finished first, you know, in first place twice. And, you know, it just doesn't seem to me that, at least in the regular season, which is what this award is, he had the biggest effect on his team. Now, is there an argument? Yeah, I mean, you know, look, he took a roster and he won the most games in Major League Baseball, the most games in the history of the Boston Red Sox. And do I think he did a great job managing the Boston Red Sox? There's no question. I think anyone that would say otherwise is just looking for a Twitter argument. But I do think Melvin and Cash meant more to their respective clubs than Cora meant to the Red Sox for the regular season.
I think there's a disconnect between some people. Like some fans are just so fair weather, they don't even understand that the voting ends before the playoffs even start. So some of your more casual fans are trying to factor in the playoffs to all of this. And then another dynamic here is you have some fans who really believe that, you know, the manager who went all the way, which in this case was Cora, should win it automatically, and that's what this award is about. And then you have the smarter half, you know, of the MLB fan base that knows that this award is more about a manager who does more with less talent, and that's ultimately what it comes down to.
So how I would alter that slightly, and I would just say which manager had the larger effect on his club's success. And that's it. And you may say, well, geez, Jerm, that's a difference without a distinction there, bud. Well, tell me what would be the three of the more likely scenarios. The Red Sox finish in first place, okay, at 100 win games. That Tampa Bay, the goddamn Devil Rays, win 90 games and are starting their you know, third best reliever to start games, so that they're, you know, this whole new we talked about Alex Cora in the playoffs going with the Rover. Kevin Cash is rewriting the script on getting his starters deep into games by having a reliever start the game. And then Bob Melvin out of the goddamn clouds with Oakland in a division that he had no basis being that good in. And just to me, it seems pretty clear cut. And I understand every, like, local guys and girls and sports fans want their local respective manager, star player, pitcher, whatever, to win the award. Again, I don't care. And that might be one of the reasons why I'm kind of unbiased in this argument, where typically I could be pretty biased. You know, but let me transition into to Liz, because Liz is a fan of the third place finisher.
Not exactly. I'm a fan of the team. I'm not a fan of Cash at all. I do not like him. What? Think about the last three seasons. It was horrible. It was painful. It was painful to watch. It was painful. I actually got to be in the press box two seasons ago, and it was painful to see the decline of the team and the decline of the energy in that clubhouse over time, like just to see what Kevin Cash did, and it just made me hate him and resent him, which it actually kind of pushed me away from the team. I'm sorry to say that, but it really, really did. That on top of a horrible experience with the people that got me in that press box. But this year, he redeemed himself. I feel like he got robbed, because it's like you were saying. You said basically everything that I kind of wanted to say, but I like that it came from a Red Sox fan. I like that you pointed out that, is it really that hard to win with, I believe, the biggest payroll in baseball this year? I mean, I know Cora came in and he did his thing. I mean, he did what Farrell couldn't do with those players outside of J.D. Martinez. But I mean, Cash really did some very interesting, risky things. Did he have many options after the front office traded away most of his team and every player that everybody knew by name, except for maybe Malik Smith stuck around, obviously. Maybe people knew Blake Snell, but I'm not really sure, and Kevin Kiermaier. But everybody else is gone. All of our pitchers are gone. Longo got traded away. Everybody's gone, and he took that. Got 90 wins, and just really did some amazing things. I wouldn't be surprised, just like what happened when Joe Maddon started doing some different things, and then other teams started to kind of follow suit and, you know, try some of the crazy outlandish things Maddon was doing. I wouldn't be surprised if you saw that a little bit more. Maybe not next year, but solidly emerging in other teams. And he really impressed me. Like, I don't know that I like him just yet. We'll see how it goes, but I certainly have a lot of respect for him, you know, now. Maybe he just needed time to settle in, I don't know, but a fan of him I am not. A fan of the team I am, and I do feel like he got robbed of this. Just based on that, I feel like he had the greatest impact on his team. They had the smallest payroll. Most of the year, his whole infield was rookies, for God's sake. I mean, nobody was doing what he did with the talent. I mean, he had talent, clearly, but just not talent on paper to look at. You'd be like, who am I watching playing? I'm watching a AAA team here, like, pretty much. AAA team and Kiermaier, that's it. And Cash really, he delivered. He delivered when nobody thought he could, including myself. So I have to be impressed with that. And even though the awards mean nothing, just like you said, all it means, like, Blake Snell winning the Cy Young basically means we're going to have him another year and trade him away, or he's going to go into free agency and probably end up on the Red Sox or the Yankees. They mean nothing, but it's nice to get a little bit of credit every now and then in a small market team that everybody thinks is a piece of shit, for lack of a better
Kevin way Cash it. Is a manager. Well,
they are a piece of shit, but I digress. Terry, do you want to go first? Because I have some comments to piggyback off Liz, but I'll wait for you.
Kevin Cash is a manager who will one day be a manager of a big market team and have a past similar to Joe Maddon. And let's just look at the totality of the talent that was taken away from him. Last offseason, before things got started, he lost Brad Boxberger, one of the better relievers, late inning relievers in the game. He lost his franchise player, Justin Longoria, who was still a very serviceable third baseman. He lost
Evan, but that's okay.
Steve Souza.
Evan Longoria, but that's okay.
Oh, did I say Justin?
I think you did.
But yeah, okay. I probably did.
Who cares? He's a giant now.
I'm capable of anything. Steve Souza, a 3,100 guy. Corey Dickerson, who was their lone all-star the season before. Lost all of them in the offseason. Then in season, he lost Alex Colomé Denard Span, mm-hmm. Brad Miller, Wilson Ramos, Matt Andrees, Nathan Evaldi, Chris Archer, wins 90. Take all that away from him, he wins 90. So he's the manager of the year, in my opinion, and they came up with some really new concepts that even Bob Melvin was adopting, you know, into that one-game wild card, whether it was smart or not on his part to do it with the A's. But you saw a lot of stuff, you know, get tried out in other markets thanks to the stuff that Kevin Cash basically pioneered. Milwaukee was another team that had a little bit of success, you know, just they would use starters to start the game, but sometimes for only two or three innings before going to a bullpen. And I just think Kevin Cash is just kind of rewrote the script, at least for smaller markets that aren't gonna, you know, wheel and deal on this huge market. You know, they're never going to be in the Harper sweepstakes or the Machado sweepstakes, so you're going to see a lot of this. And I thought Cash should have won it, and then Council maybe, you know, but then the more I looked at Snitker as I was doing my notes, I could kind of see why he won it. But part of me wonders if MLB might have snubbed Kevin Cash and Craig Council because maybe they're not too keen on this new analytics opener bullpen style of baseball games, and maybe MLB favors those bigger markets who are going to spend, and ultimately, you know, that's best for the players, it's best for the union. So that could be far-fetched, but I just thought the two creative geniuses got snubbed here, and those are my thoughts. But Cash, I felt, should have won it for sure.
So just to touch briefly on the people that vote on these awards and the Hall of Fame generally, is they're just old farts, and they're like refuse to adapt and adjust to the game, and like they still want the game to be the same way it was 20 years ago. And it's infuriating, and, you know, it's just amazing to me that with all the evolutions that baseball has made over the last 100 years, that for whatever reason, the generation behind us, like, pretends that they're the, like, baseball went into their generation and should come out the exact same. It just baffles me. That's a topic for a different podcast, maybe in a slow week and, you know, in January or whatever. But that's part of the problem. I also think, you know, to be honest, Terry, I think that's a little far-fetched. But, and you know how much I hate this, Terry. Okay. I agree with you. I agree with Liz. Kevin Cash, to me, is the manager of the year. He did the most with the least. Tampa sold at the deadline. They won 90 games in a division where the Boston Red Sox won 108. The Yankees won 100. To me, you know, and then to have the creative mind in baseball, it's difficult because the game's been played for so long. Everything's been done. And then he goes out and says, you know what, I'm gonna start a reliever to get my starters into the seventh inning. And he did it because, you know, like you said, Archer and some of these other starting pitchers not named Snell were traded away or hurt or whatever the situation was. So he said, you know, what's my biggest weakness? And how can I support that weakness the best way I know how to minimize its effect on the wins and losses? And he said, well, let's go out and throw us a reliever first. See if we can't get a lead. And he goes and wins 90 games with just a shitty stadium with a shitty roster.
Stadium has nothing to do with it.
With a shitty mascot. So look, the Devil Rays, which I will always call them, the Devil Rays, with all due respect, Liz.
Everything I love.
Mm-hmm. You know, look, and I think, frankly speaking, I'm going to defer to Liz here in a second after I just have a few comments on the National League. We all agree So, you know, after Liz, I say we move on to the next topic, but just briefly. And this is in the vein of, like, I don't care about these awards. Like, to me, the manager of the Braves, the manager of the Brewers, and the manager, Bud Black, of the Colorado Rockies, to me, they're all the same. To me, they all did more than they were supposed to. Atlanta arrived 2 to 3 years earlier than it looked like they were going to. Milwaukee has a ton of talent, right? And they had probably the best bullpen, or certainly an elite bullpen. And Atlanta wound up having Acuna, you know, Freddie Freeman wound up being, I think, fourth in the NL MVP. You know, they had a ton of talent. And so to me, the NL was just was more muddled up. And I felt like any three of these guys could win it. And I don't have an issue with Snitker winning it. Just because I thought at the end of the day, we walked into the year thinking Atlanta wasn't even close, and that, you know, they wound up going ahead and doing what they did. So I don't have an issue with the NL. I thought it could go to any three of those guys. But in the AL, I do think, for the reasons we've discussed, it was clear-cut Cash, then Melvin, then Cora. And the fact, I think we should start drug testing whoever voted for Aaron Boone. That's just my final thought.
Yeah. And go ahead. Sorry. No, you go, Liz.
Oh, no. I was just going to say, I have to agree. I mean, the only reason Snicker, you know, got it is just because the Braves sucked for so long. And I feel like they were almost subscribing to the Cubs-Astros model. And it just didn't, like Jeremy said, it just didn't take them as long for whatever reason. They didn't have to suck for as many years, although they certainly weren't the Braves of yesteryear and haven't been for a long time and still aren't. But the Brewers, even if they haven't, like, been that great, they haven't been that horrible either. And the Rockies seem to have been going back and forth and being real streaky. Like, you'll see, like, oh, my God, the Rockies are on a 10-game win streak or whatever, and then all of a sudden they lose 5 or something like that. They've been real streaky, and they just found a nice, steady pace, I guess. But their division is weak, I mean, aside from the Dodgers. So, I mean, it's not really hard for them to get 90 wins, I don't feel. Granted, I know they play a ton of other teams, but, I mean, the majority of the teams are within their division. So I don't feel like that was as difficult as it was, you know, for our division. I mean, our division is insane, you know, pretty much every single year. But
Liz,
yep.
Would you agree with me that, generally speaking, that attempted pun with the Rockies really rocking was a bit much?
I meant to say
I'm like, geez, Liz,
what's that
pun? Come on now.
Sorry about that. I apologize for the horrible pun. It slipped out. They've been streaky, very streaky. And I mean, they just showed every weakness that just wasn't exposed in their division in the playoffs, you know? And the Brewers just came in and worked them over and did what they do. They're a gritty team. You know, they play in a difficult division. They play against the Cubs and the Cardinals all the time. And the Pirates, when the Pirates decide to actually be good, which this year they were not. But I mean, they definitely, you know, showed their weakness. You know, they for some reason just cannot pull it together, and I don't know why. With Arenado, Story, and Blackman, you know, at the plate, I mean, they should at least be able to do something, but they just kind of folded. But as previously discussed, the playoffs have nothing to do with manager of the year. So
with the Braves, though, who would you guys say? And this is really interesting, actually. Who would you guys say is the leader of that clubhouse? Because there is a clear-cut leader there. If you guys know.
Freddie Freeman? I mean, Freddie Freeman's the only one. He's been around for a long time.
That's the thing that everybody says. Everybody assumes it's Freeman, but it's really Nick Markakis. And Freeman himself will say he's more... that Freeman himself is more of a passive guy, and it's Nick Markakis getting into the faces of all the young players and keeping them in line. And really interesting, not this past season, but the 2017 season, I think Snitker, I think that was the season where he was like the interim manager to start with. They got rid of Freddy Gonzalez, and he kind of blew a game. He made a bad call or whatever, and John Hart was still the GM of that team. And Hart storms into Snitker's office and just berates him over whatever the mistake was. And then Hart leaves his office, and then Nick Markakis cuts him off and says, if you ever talk to my manager like that again, I'm going to knock you out. And Hart was actually fired at the end of that season, or he stepped down. I can't remember which, but he was definitely gone. And then Snitker was named the full-time manager. So kind of interesting behind-the-scenes stuff with that Atlanta team.
I totally forgot Markakis was even with them, but he's definitely the senior, you know, that they're, and it's interesting that he's been with them for a couple years now, hasn't he?
He's a while, actually.
His four-year contract just ended up, so.
Yeah.
Actually, yeah. Terry, that'd be someone we could talk about in our ongoing series of the pending free agents.
Yeah.
To be honest with you, I do focus on all four major North American sports leagues, and so I don't have the pulse of every clubhouse. I'll just admit that right now. I did overlook Markakis. I've heard the story that Terry is referencing. Markakis was spoken of extremely highly in Baltimore, and I know that they have some remorse about their failure to re-sign him back in, I think it was 2015. He's been a really good player in Major League Baseball for a really, really long time. And I think it go with Acuna,
Albies,
Freeman. They had a ton of talent. They just arrived early. But again, with the NL, to me, and one of my themes here as we move on to the players is when I roughed out like the top three in each award. To me, it just shows you that the American League is so far and away the superior conference that it's not even close. When we're talking about, you know, and I think it's highlighted by the managers as well. Like, we have a real serious debate over the AL managers, and we're all, you know, AL fans or teams of AL fans of teams in the American League. But the NL is just by far and away, in my opinion, in 2018 at least, the lesser of the divisions. And as we go through these awards and talk about and argue about who should or shouldn't have won, I think the theme at the end of this for our listeners is going to be, oh, wow, I mean, the American League was so much better. So, you know, that's where I'm at with it. The NL seems like it could have been any one of those three guys. To me, and it's crazy as we all have the third place team, even though Liz is the only one that would have any bias towards that decision. So, you know, it's interesting.
Yeah, and so we will move on to the next category or award, and that will be Rookie of the Year. May as well start with the American League, and that came down to Shohei Ohtani and Miguel Andujar. And actually, we'll start with Liz this time. Who did you expect to come out on top in the AL for Rookie of the Year?
How could they not vote for Ohtani? I mean, really, when has the MLB ever seen a player that consistently pitches and, you know, DHs? You know, when has that ever happened? It's never happened. Like, he had, I was trying to look at his numbers and things, and he had 20 home runs, 50 Ks, and 9 stolen bases. And I saw some stat that said something like, in his rookie year, he only stole one less base than Mike Trout. In fact, in a lot of the things I was looking at, Mike Trout is definitely like, he's always to compare, like, people are always comparing everything to him. And in fact, he was second in MVP. Like, I feel so bad for him that he's stuck on a team like the Angels. I really, really hope they do something, if he continues to stay with them beyond his contract. I think he maybe has like 2 years or something left. I'm not quite sure. But to see him never win a championship will be a sad thing. But how could they not vote for him? I mean, he was just so interesting, such the story. And I mean, these are writers that vote. I mean, so even though Andahar, you know, got more home runs, I don't feel like that made him more valuable, you know, at that point, you know, as a rookie. I feel like Ohtani had a greater impact on his team, even though, unfortunately, just like with Trout, it was for naught since he's on the Angels.
Well, the thing with Ohtani is that he chose the Angels, so I have zero sympathy for that because he came out at the time of the posting fee and said, I don't want to play for the Yankees. I don't want to play for the Red Sox. And then I think a week later he took the step of saying, I don't want to play on the East Coast. So, listen, look, Ohtani is soft as, like, toilet paper. And I don't have a problem with that, like, you know, because he was unapologetic about it. Like, he wants to get paid. He wants to clearly play baseball. He loves the game. But he chose the Angels. So him and the Angels just, you know, in my mind, just deserve each other.
Now, with that,
with that said, Miguel Andujar and Gleyber Torres, get the hell out of here with that. I'm sorry. Ohtani's your rookie of the year. He's the most dynamic player in Major League Baseball. He can't be the MVP because he didn't stay healthy on the mound and he wasn't so dominant that he would enter that discussion. But he, of the rookies, I mean, like, seriously, get out of here with Andujar and Torres. So, you know, I think to me, like, this is actually the most tied with the AL MVP. This is probably the most clear cut, like, award. And then to touch on the NL, I don't really have, like, Walker Buehler was third. I just don't see that. Soto, Ronald Acuna Jr. could have gone either way for me. Those guys were both absolute studs, power hitters on good teams, or at least we thought the Nationals were going to be a good team. You know, anytime you can't say that Atlanta arrived earlier than expected and then not look at the rookies that you didn't expect to be on the team. And that's the perfect reason why Ronald Acuna, in my mind, should have been the NL Rookie of the Year. And so I can't say with Brian Snitker that, you know, they arrived early and then not give credit to the fact that they had this stud rookie that had a huge impact. So to me, I have no issue with the voting on these, on this. For whatever reason, again, like the old people that like shake their hand when the, you know, at the cloud that blocks the sun for like 10 seconds, you know, for whatever reason, I'm hearing online that people have a problem with Ohtani winning Rookie of the Year because, you know, he's quote unquote two players in one. Like, go play pinochle and shuffleboard down at Del Boca Vista Phase 2 with Morty Seinfeld and get the hell out of here because you're attempting to hold the game of baseball back. This is a revolutionary baseball player. Now, is he soft? Is he toilet paper soft? And did he pick like a soft landing point with LA when contenders wanted him? Yeah, and there's no question about it. He basically admitted as such. But just get out of here that he's not the AL Rookie of the Year.
Who wouldn't want to be in LA? Not LA like the team, but LA like the area. Aside from that, it's on fire right now. Who wouldn't want to be in sunshine and palm trees? I want to be there.
But LA stinks.
I love Southern California. So,
getting into the National League, I was kind of stunned how close Acuna and Soto's numbers really were. I mean, you got Acuna 26 home runs, 66 RBIs. Soto 22 home runs, 70 RBIs. Their batting average is literally only 1 point apart. Soto is interestingly 40 points above Acuna in the on base percentage. But Acuna does have a better slugging percentage, you know, but it balances out because their OPS ends up to be pretty even as well. Acuna stole 11 more bases than Soto did. But, I mean, the impressive thing about Soto was he was 19 to start the year, and I think Harper was 18, you know, with the same club. So I just feel like Acuna might have got the nod because his team got into the postseason, and he was a big part of it. And he had, like, the minor league hype, you know, the pedigree. I mean, I forget exactly when he got called up, but, you know, people were clamoring for it, much like in Toronto, they were clamoring for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. to make his debut. And he's obviously the best, you know, minor leaguer, best prospect in all of MLB. But Acuna's hype was similar. And, you know, he came up, he lived up to the hype and helped his team get into the playoffs. So I think that kind of pushed him over the top there. And with Ohtani, he lived up to the hype as well. I mean, the whole offseason leading up to that, we knew he was coming. We knew this was going to be the year he made his major league debut. And I kept saying the whole time, I'm like, he's either going to be a pitcher or he's going to be a hitter. There is no way he is going to succeed at both. And he hit 22 home runs, 61 RBIs. I don't even know if Benintendi got that high. He fell off a cliff. But just really robust for a rookie. You know, hit .285. His OBP was pretty healthy at .361. But then when you go to the pitching side of things, he started 10 games, which is what Red Sox fans might know as a Buchholz sample size, and but did have a 3.31 ERA, and he is going to have Tommy John, so he'll mostly or probably entirely DH next year, and then maybe in 2020 will return to the mound. But it hasn't been done since Babe Ruth, and TVs and airplanes weren't really flying back then. I forget when the Wright brothers, you know.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure airplanes were invented by then. But
okay,
look, actually, now that I think about it, I'm not quite so sure. It might have been
like 6 or 8 years before, but still, so many things were not a thing yet, you know, when Babe Ruth was doing it. And then, little did we know, a kid from Japan would be the next guy to do it and kind of take the league by storm. So I don't have a problem. I'll wrap my part of it up by saying I don't have a problem with either Rookie of the Year.
Fun fact, December 17th, 1903, Wilbur and Orville Wright
Okay.
We're the first at flight.
So I was way off. Just
a little fun fact. Now, Terry, this again is one of those rare circumstances where we all seemingly agree. The thing where with awards, and again, I hate awards. Like, to me, it's just like you're taking team sports and then trying to make them into something they're not intended to be, which is an individual thing. The difference between, and you made a great point, and as you were speaking, I had Ronald Acuna's and Juan Soto's stats up. They are very similar. The difference is Soto was on a team that actually had a ton of talent, and they underachieved, and Ronald Acuna Jr. was on a team that really was expected to probably be, you know, somewhere below 500, and in large part due to his emergence, they went ahead and made the playoffs. And I think that's a huge factor because, again, I still think even though awards are individual, they should be based on the effect of the larger, you know, component, which, of course, in team sports is the team. So that's why I think he won. It's why I agree with the award. To me, again, the pitching was underwhelming. He got hurt. But Ohtani, just, I'm sorry, he's a revolutionary talent in the game of baseball. And To be honest with you, I agree that he was the rookie of the year. But for reasons I've already discussed about the problem with the voting process, I'm surprised that he was, for as revolutionary as he is, I'm surprised that he, the voting went the way it did here. So that's my last thoughts. I'm ready to move on, and I'll defer to Liz for her last thoughts.
Oh, no, that's pretty much my last thoughts, too. Definitely impact, I feel like, does make a difference. Because, like you said, it is about the team. I mean, one player can't do anything. I'll defer to Mike Trout for that. You know, clearly he's always made an impact, but, you know, one player can't win it, you know. So it is about how much that one player makes the team better. And Acuña definitely, you know, he did that. So no, I totally agree too. And I also agree that the Nationals underachieved.
Yeah, well,
they always
no one
do.
Can dispute that. So I'm going to take my opportunity, first chance at the AL and NL Cy Young Award. Terry?
All right. I like it. We'll just start with National League because no pitcher in Major League Baseball was better than Jake DeGrom this year. And one writer out of San Diego picked Scherzer for the National League. Literally, the other 29 went for DeGrom. And he's shown the talent. You know, he's had some injuries in previous seasons, 2017 especially. But he had a 10 WAR. His ERA 1.70, and he started either 33 or 34 starts. So to have an ERA that far under 2 is just absolutely impressive. 217 innings pitched with a 0.91 WHIP, which actually did tie Scherzer in that category, and 269. Strikeouts for DeGrom. I mean, easily the best pitcher in baseball and probably the least interesting award, you know, throughout all of them because it was just such a blowout in this case. And then American League, I thought Snell should win it, you know, and he came out of nowhere. I don't think anybody predicted that. I'd say Porcello was a longer shot just because he sucked a lot more before he won it, but Snell, you know, very, you know, his ascension was very steady, and then this year he just kind of emerged as a bona fide ace, and you know, a 1.89 ERA, not that many innings pitched because of the management style of Kevin Cash, as well as some time on the DL, but really impressive. And one thing I want to say about Verlander, his stats were better than his career average. I mean, his ERA 2.52, and his career ERA is 3.38. So he was significantly better than, you know, his career average. But what really impressed me about Verlander, 35 years old, and I think he turns 36 any day now, and he had 290 strikeouts, almost hit 300 for a guy his age. Extremely impressive. But I think Snell was the clear-cut winner. So those are my thoughts.
I'm hosting now, Liz. So let's, Liz, your thoughts, please.
I mean, clearly, if Snell didn't win this, I was really going to think the Rays were getting, like, blackballed in some way, which really wouldn't surprise me because, again, pretty much we get shit on by everyone. But numbers don't lie. I mean, at least that. And Snell clearly had an impact on the team if we want to go back, you know, to that. He helped us win. You know, we knew pretty much, like, maybe we didn't win. Clearly, we didn't win every outing, you know, that he had. But we had a really, really good shot at doing it. And even though his innings pitch were, you know, I think about 35 or so less than Verlander, he still would typically, you know, go out and have at least five, if not, 6 or 7, you know, something like that, you know, every game. And he always stayed so calm. When he first came up from the minors, like, everybody had such great expectations. We thought he was going to be hot straight out the gate. And so it's been, I think this is his third season. He pitched half, and then last year was his first full season with us. And we were all just, like, as fans, just sitting there, like, waiting for Snell to be who we were told he was. And this year he finally proved it. So I feel like he really deserved it. Verlander is awesome. You know, he's definitely a first round, you know, Hall of Famer. But I mean, Snell just got it done this year, and he had the greatest impact on his team, and that's what it comes down to for me. Plus, he's a lefty, so I mean, that on top of it, I mean, that's, for some reason, it's more difficult for lefties to win the Cy Young. I have no idea why, but or at least that's my understanding. Maybe I'm wrong in that respect, but they just win it less. So that was awesome. But when I was looking at DeGrom, it's really unfortunate that such a good pitcher, and I'm glad that people don't just look at wins, because to look at his wins, I mean, he only has 10 wins, but his team sucks. So, I mean, what do you expect? Like, I'm glad that, you know, there's more numbers there to look at. I really hate that wins are even in, like, a category, because they don't really matter. You know, they kind of matter. They're a nice number to look at, but really what matters is that ERA and the strikeouts. Like, to me, those are the two main things that need to be looked at. And Scherzer's amazing, but DeGrom was definitely a clear number one just based on those things.
Yeah, Liz, I like a lot of your commentary there. To me, the three most important stats are, for a starting pitcher, are game started, innings, and then, you know, WHIP/ERA. That, to me, is, you know, again, the best ability is availability. So games pitched, how much, and how often can you go out and give a quality start? Innings are just so important, especially during the regular season, when it's all about, you know, bullpen and roster management through the season. And then WHIP and ERA, you know, WHIP because how, like, for example, with the Red Sox, we talk about Craig Kimball. Like, that guy loves putting people on base. Like, that, he gets excited to walk the leadoff hitter. Guys like Snell, who have, like, in this year, he had a 0.97 WHIP. Like, Jesus Christ, that's impressive. So it's like low stress innings. It's a lot of 1-2-3 innings. It's a lot of work. And what that does is that then allows, it kicks back to the second most important thing, which is innings pitched. Gets deep in games. And then ERA, he's sub 2. He's a 1.89. To me, it was just a complete no-brainer. Verlander, you're awesome. You are a first ballot Hall of Famer. You're dating or married to Kate Upton, so, like, you got enough good things going for you, so just get the hell out of here with another award. But in all joking aside, to me it was Blake Snell. I never even thought twice about it, and when I got the ESPN alert on my phone that it was Blake Snell, I just, like, quickly dismissed it, like, yeah, no shit. Just as a little aside, he had a 4.04 ERA last year with a 1.33 WHIP, so huge turnaround for this guy. And again, to just briefly touch on the AL Manager of the Year, not voted correctly, Kevin Cash. You got to think that guy's ability to motivate a roster had a factor in getting the most out of this guy. To the NL, it's so clearly Jake DeGrom, it's sickening. Like, and by the way, if you're an active member of the New York Mets, you should be ashamed of yourself. You are the ass clown program of Major League Baseball. And the fact that this guy had the team success he had and was still so clearly the NL Cy Young just speaks to the volume of how pathetic that whole program is. Jake DeGrom, clear-cut winner, nasty. 100% just filthy stuff. Like, I love watching that guy pitch, compete. It's amazing that they couldn't find a positive on the days he started, that they could only find that positive 10 times or whatever it was. It's pathetic. You know, on some level, like, you know, and it's amazing because 3 years ago they had Harvey and they had Mats and DeGrom and Thor, and they had all these guys, and DeGrom has risen to the top of that, you know, group, and that whole franchise just is just so pathetic. So to me, it's just a no-brainer. Max Scherzer, and again, probably another first ballot. Well, not probably, another first ballot Hall of Famer. Aaron Nola, absolute stud. Freeland was fourth. Corbin finished fifth. He's going to make a ton of money in free agency. Just brings me to my last point, and it's really not directly on point for what we're trying to accomplish with this podcast, but Snell and DeGrom, both guys making $0 by, you know, top flight standards. Both guys who just won a significant award. Both guys who are going to price themselves out of their respective teams. Both guys I wanted the Boston Red Sox.
Oh, God. Another Ray for you guys to hate on when he's not going to perform up to standard, I'm sure. But Snell is, he's a real quiet, demure person. I remember when I was in the clubhouse, and you know, you do those obligatory things where you've all got your phones on record and you're shoving them in the faces of the players while the major, well, I say major loosely, while the bigger media people are asking the players questions. And of course we could, but I just could never think of anything that seemed important enough, you know, to ask. But he's so soft-spoken and quiet in the calm, and I really feel like that attitude is really kind of what helped him. Like, he probably worked on a lot of stuff, but one of the biggest criticisms that I know Terry has against Price, just to compare him to him, is just how emotional he gets in his tells, you know, where Blake Snell is just calm and
cool as a cucumber.
He doesn't show any of that. He just goes out there, does his thing, walks off, he's done, you know, kind of a deal. So fingers crossed he doesn't go to the Yankees or you guys, but he certainly won't be staying with us. I can tell you that right now. Unless for some strange reason Sternberg ends up loosening the strings on his purse or something. I'm not sure, but seriously doubt that's happening.
Or a new stadium.
How you keep him is he goes back next year to a 4.4 pitcher and loses the value, and that's how you keep him. Because otherwise, if this is what he's going to be, he's going to a big market club.
Oh, yeah. Bill, I mean, even if that happens, I feel like they'll trade him anyway, just like we traded away pretty much every single pitcher. Like, we got rid of Odorizzi. I don't even know what he did this year with the Twins. Cobb, and obviously Cobb is a complete piece of shit now, basically, after Tommy John. Who else did we get rid of? Archer just was mediocre at best, you know, with the Pirates, although I feel like whenever a pitcher changes leagues, they need at least half a season, if not more than that, to settle in and get used to the subtle differences of the hitters and, you know, just the environment and everything like that. But I still think no matter what he's gone. Like, that's pretty much my view with any player that we have. You know, if we're lucky enough to sign him for any amount of time, great. But then after that, you know, another team's going to snipe him, or we're going to trade him before that. So that's the story of my life. You know,
couple interesting things before we get into the last category. DeGrom, you know, wins it this year with the Mets, 2018. R.A. Dickey won it not all that long ago, 2012, also with the Mets as a knuckleballer. And Jeremy, you know, make the point that organization is, you know, a dumpster fire organization, and they didn't step up like DeGrom did. And I always say that the Mets, the Marlins, and the Angels are the three worst franchises in MLB, and here two of them are, you know, one with DeGrom getting a major award, and then another one with Ohtani. So we're rewarding the bad kids in a way, you know, the kids being the teams and not the, you know, the award winners.
Well, maybe a part of it, Terry, if you're going to put it that way, is what they overcame within their own program to do what they did individually.
Yeah, I take nothing away from the player, but I hate to see, you know, the Mets, you know, get any glory from it, you know, because they're just so bad. But they do have a new front office, so maybe it'll change.
Well, and I feel like the Angels might actually be interesting, even though I don't think they have a manager at this point. Not that I've noticed. I haven't really been diligently been paying attention. But
they do.
They do. They do have one.
Brad Ausmus.
It'll be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, and their problem, too, is the owner's kind of like Jerry Jones is with the Cowboys. The owner just has a little bit too much say, you know, when it comes to building the roster, when he should be letting the general manager make the decisions. Kind of like, or you could kind of compare it to the Lucchino situation where, you know, they really should have just let Epstein do his thing. And then the same with Ben Sherrington, who was a finalist in, I think, Baltimore, by the way, which is interesting. But they went with the Astros executive. But and it is Brad Ausmus, the former Tigers manager, that will be managing the Angels. Yeah, and apparently Ausmus was a little too lenient with the players and was kind of like one of them, and you know, didn't lead very effectively. So it's extremely fitting that he's gonna go try to lead a dumpster fire organization in Anaheim. But, yeah, so, Liz, how about you host the MVP part? We've all kind of done this, so why don't you set us up for that?
I mean, I feel like at least for the AL, the MVP, you know, was pretty clear to all of us. And, you know, even though, I mean, time and time again, we've said awards, you know, don't matter necessarily, but it went in the Red Sox favor, and everything. So, I mean, it, obviously you guys have to feel amazing. So me asking you your thoughts, you know, about Mookie winning is
something,
but how do you feel about NL, I guess? Like about the choice with the NL, because clearly AL, like, that's pretty much a given. But
well, I'd actually like to comment, especially on your choice of words there, Liz. You said it went in the Red Sox favor. Respectfully, I disagree. Mookie Betts is now going to be the next probably $300 million 10-year player. That's not in the favor of the Boston Red Sox. Like, I really was hoping for – this is the one award I cared about because I wanted Mookie to lose it. and because, like, again, I don't care about, like, you know, Mookie gets a fancy award to put on his mantle. Fine, whatever. Put him up next to all the bowling trophies he has. He is – it's starting to concern me that this guy is not going to be a Boston Red Sox. You're right completely that this is a no doubter. So I'm not going to put any discussion into the other people. Here's what I'm going to put into. I just want to put into a little bit of context the year he had. Okay, according to BaseballReference.com, he has tied with Ted Williams in 1946. The number 21 highest WAR year in the history of Major League Baseball. Now, you're going to say, well, 21st, well, Jeremy, that's not really historical. Well, let me just put it this way. Except for Barry Bonds in 01 and 02, and I think it's Cal Ripken in 1991, there hasn't been a higher rated player since the 60s. And by the way, like 8 of the first 12 seasons are all Babe Ruth. So if you take Babe Ruth out, Bonds out, and Ripken out, it's like he's approaching like the fourth or fifth best year of all time. So it's crazy when you think about the fact that he's been ahead of all of those Trout years. He's ahead of guys. He's ahead of other Barry Bonds years, like Barry Bonds' 04 year, Willie Mays, Ted Williams, Jimmy Fox, Mickey Mantle. I mean, if you look at the list I'm looking at and put it in perspective, there's no debate. He was the MVP. It's just really, really special what he did. And at the end, us Red Sox fans are fucked because he's probably not going to end up being a Red Sox. Get into the NL. Christian Yelich, this is a great example of the MVP not being the best player. Christian Yelich is not the best player in the National League. I actually think Mookie and Trout are now kind of neck and neck. I think they're both like kind of co-best players in the American League. Christian Yelich is not the best player in the National League. He was the most valuable. I don't disagree with that. When you look at the top five vote getters in the American League versus the NL, I think this is a prime example of what I was talking about earlier with just the dichotomy between the talent in the two leagues. AL MVP, in order, Betts, Trout, Jose Ramirez with Cleveland, JD Martinez, and Alex Bregman, who, by the way, is just, to me, just an absolute gamer. NL, Christian Yelich, Javier Baez, Nolan Arenado, Freddie Freeman, and Jacob deGrom. To me, it's just not even close. The AL is just so far superior with talent. I have no objection to Christian Yelich winning the NL MVP. I don't think he's the best player in the National League. I like Nolan Arenado better. There are other better players to me. But I think the voting wound up being correct here. You know, unfortunately, because I wanted Betts to lose.
You really don't think the Red Sox will put out the money for Betts?
No, I do think they're going to put out a significant amount of money. And, I mean, we're the Boston Red Sox, right? Like,
I know, exactly. So for you to tell me that they're priced out of the market is insane.
Yeah, no, I mean, the Double Rays have no shot. But the problem becomes...
Maybe when he's 40 in his last year, we'll get him as a DH or something.
Yeah, exactly. He has to, like, throw left-handed because his right arm's been thrown out, so he's, like, only $1 million a year guy. Now he becomes a Double Ray in 2052. Yeah. So, I'm not making fun of the Double Rays. I understand that they have to do more with less, and now living in South Florida... I understand that market stinks. My sister lives in Tampa. I do get, you know, look, it's going to be really, really hard for that team to ever be more than what it is right now while it's in Tropicana Field in that, you know, Hillsborough County or whatever the county it's in over there. Pinellas, whatever. Difference without a distinction. So if you're not... if you're not picking up on what I'm saying there, I'm shitting on that area. So that's why I think Kevin Cash is the clear-cut AL manager. Like, you know, all of this ties together, right? So, you know, it is what it is. I just don't think Betts – I think – and here's what scares me. I think Mookie Betts is going to go get the most money. And if you line up five teams and the Red Sox are third, he's not going to take that discount to go to Boston. I don't know, you know, Terry maybe weigh in here, but or Liz, you too. But it just seems like Mookie's always going to go to the highest bidder. And now that he's won an MVP, that bid goes up a little bit.
Tell me what player doesn't usually do that, though. And I didn't even realize until it was probably the last show I was on, which was a while ago. So forgive me, I don't remember. But Terry was saying how one of the main reasons why Price came to the Sox was because he was basically pressured, I guess, into making that decision by the players' union. Because if a high price free agent, you know, takes less money, then that does nothing but hurt future free agents. So players are pressured into doing it. Like, I kind of see it differently after hearing that, and it totally makes sense. It just keeps driving the market. That's like capitalism in baseball terms, you know, basically.
The Players Association has a say. Now, it's up to the athlete about how much of a say they have. But the Players Association is always going to advocate it's like a real estate agent selling houses. Like, you know, they want to sell the house next door, and then they want to sell the house next door for more. Mm-hmm. And if you take a dip on the first house, then you're not going to sell the second house for the same amount of dollars. Mm-hmm. So it's the same thing with the asset being an athlete. You're going to have the situation where you have a guy like Bryce Harper, Manny Machado, the latter of which is an absolute D-bag. And And you're going to want to take the top off the market so that when Mookie Betts comes around in 2 years, he gets, you know, what, 8% more, 10% more, 12% more. And it's just going to continue to drive the price up, because how does the Players Association, you know, justify what they're doing, the fees they're taking from the players and you know, and that sort of thing? They justify it by saying, we're having effect on player salaries. We're affecting benefits. We're affecting salary. And ultimately, we are, as a result of their efforts, making, you know, more money for the player. Mm-hmm. So that's to me, that's how it is. It's honestly, it's not any difference than the teachers' union or whatever else. And I don't want to get the union thing, but it's important to the union to have each player make more than the last. And when you have a transcendent player like Bryce Harper, like Mookie Betts, you're putting, you know, the Players Association is going to put pressure. Now, there are guys that have taken less. Terry's going to eviscerate me here if I'm wrong. But I remember Mike Lowell. I'm waiting for Terry to yell at me here. I think Mike Lowell was one of those guys who said, like, I want to be a Boston Red Sox, so just stop it. Just get a fair contract and let's move on. And there have been other guys. I think when Curt Schilling re-signed, not the year for $8 million that he actually didn't play, but the first time, I think he was also, like, willing to just take what he could from the Red Sox and stay a Red Sox. So there are examples of it not working out for the Players Association, but generally speaking. And by the way, you know, and I probably would be this way if I was that talented, I probably would take the most dollars. So I don't blame the athlete. I just hope for the sake of the Boston Red Sox, he's willing to stay a Boston Red Sox, even if it means taking a little bit less.
Mike Lowell, you know, might have taken a slight discount, but he was 34 years old, I believe, at the time that he signed that. So that's not going to be really a guy that the players' union is going to, like, hold a gun to his head and say, no, you need to go play for this team for $6 or $7 million more, you know, overall. You know, it's far different with the, you know, the A-list free agents that, you know, we're kind of watching in this market. And another guy, you know, not quite similar to Lowell, but Mitch Moreland took less money in 2017 to play for the Red Sox. The Indians offered him more, but he took a little bit less money to play for us because he wanted to play 81 games a year at Fenway Park. That was important to him. So the dynamics are a little bit finicky. And David Price, I don't think the union necessarily held a gun to his head to get him to sign with the Red Sox. The Red Sox offered one more year than what the Cardinals did. The money was about the same annually, but once the extra year came up, I think Price just knew, you know, he had to do it, you know, and he had to go to Boston and have that awkward, you know, make up with David Ortiz. But with Bryce Harper, and also there's another difference too. Like, I don't know that the union is necessarily pressuring Mookie Betts to go all the way to free agency when that's 3 or 4 years out. Like, if he's offered 200 something million and maybe in the mid to upper half of that, I'd be surprised if the union said, you know what, don't take that, because he's just gonna hit free agency 4 years sooner on the other end and then maybe be in line, not for a contract that size, but still a nice chunk of change. So to me, it's extremely disappointing that Mookie wouldn't even come to the table. He's two seasons away from testing the market now, and, you know, so there's no point in really negotiating now. He's that close. But it was profoundly disappointing to me that there couldn't be more dialogue. And I don't think the Red Sox initial extension offer was really that overwhelming anyway, but had they approached it the right way, I don't know that Mookie would have came to the table. And if his number starts with a 3, and I don't know why it wouldn't, I'm not going to be interested. I'm really not. And, You know oh, that
Terry, get the fuck out of here with that, please.
No,
he's a transcendent player. He's proven it in this city. He just won an MVP. He just won a World Series. Get out of here with that. And you know I love to disagree with you. So, but I do truly. This is not smoke and mirrors. This is not. Posturing. This is, you know, seriously. This guy is a once. First of all, he's a point guard athletically in the NBA, playing right field at Fenway Park. He is an absolute electric factory. He hits for power. He hits for average. He hits to right field. He hits to left field. He runs the bases. He has an elite throwing arm. He's an elite defensive player who just won, I think, his second or third Cy Young. Like, if there's ever a guy who, and by the way, you already know he can succeed in the city. If there's ever a guy that should be worth $300 million to the Boston Red Sox, this is the guy.
All right, here's where I'm going to disagree with you, Jeremy, and you're gonna let me get it all out here, okay? Every roster has to have balance. Bryce Harper isn't worth $300 million to me. He's a piece of shit. He's a clubhouse cancer, and I'm just not going to sign a player. I'm not going to jam my roster with that kind of payroll. I want it balanced. I'd rather just take three. You could get three 3,100 guys probably for, or at least two of them for probably what Mookie is going to make. And then you can get one of the best closers in the game for that same exact value. And that's what I'm going to do. I don't care. I'm going to be responsible. I don't give a flying fuck how good of a generational talent Mookie Betts is. When it came to October, his batting average slipped to 226. That's his lifetime average in the month of October, which is now a pretty healthy fucking sample size. So I don't give a fuck what your perception is. I'm not interested in that kind of payroll. I'm just not. And this is only the second time in the history of the World Series it ever got won with a player making over $200 million. It doesn't happen often. So the Cleveland Indians have a great offense. They just weren't great in other areas. I mean, Francisco Lindor tied him with 129 runs scored, and His average wasn't quite as good, but I'll take my young prospects, and I'm drawing blanks now because I didn't think I was gonna get that amped up, but I'm not gonna do it.
I know that was intense.
I have elicited a form of Terry that I have not seen before. Terry, look, obviously those comments are directly at me. So if Liz, if you don't mind, I'd just like to respond to them.
Oh, no, please go for it. I'm just sitting back. By the way, I
absolutely love a good debate, and I love when people disagree with me because I think it creates the best content. And I think that both Terry and I here we're not making up how we feel. And to me, with it being authentic, it creates a really good kind of dynamic here. And also, that's the most I've heard Terry swear in like 25 episodes or whatever. So I'm just all sorts of excited about it right now. Terry, I started my comment by saying I think Betts by winning the MVP has an effect on pricing himself out of Boston. And frankly speaking, I think that if it's Dombrowski still at the time that Mookie comes to free agency, I think the chances are higher that he resigns in Boston than whoever comes next, because they're going to counteract Dombrowski's fly by the seat of his pants approach with more of a analytical approach at that position. Now, it probably won't be president of baseball operations like it is Dombrowski, but they're going to go back to like the Charrington type guy who relies more on analytics. And if that happens, then there's no chance bet signs. None. Zero. Because they're going to agree with you. And I don't vehemently disagree with you. My comment was more directed to the fact that there's no chance he's going to sign, because I do think there's a chance he signs. And I think if there is a player worth $300 million, this is the guy. He's a five-tool guy. He's an electric factory, great smile, good-looking, marketable, all the things we've talked about in the last 2 to 3 podcasts as we've been going through the top free agents in Major League Baseball. So your approach is analytical. It's financially fiscal and responsible. And I'm using a couple buzzwords I'm not typically using, but I get it. I just think that if there is that guy that you can go to and say, we're willing to extend beyond what we find is quote-unquote financially responsible, this is the guy. The second factor in why I feel that way is because by the time that Mookie becomes a free agent, Pablo Sandoval will be off the books. All these shitty contracts related to people that don't play for the Boston Red Sox will be free and clear. They won't have a ton of money extended, because the guys you're talking about signing this year, Eovaldi, Kelly, Kimbrel, who I don't think is going to sign, there's no chance he's going to sign. These are 2 to 3 year contracts with maybe a fourth year option. And we've talked extensively about it, so I'm not going to go further than I need to. I think there's going to be plenty of money available. I think the term is going to be a problem. Like 10 years is a really big problem, because you're almost getting past the current TV deal into a realm that there's too much unknown in any 10-year deal. And so, again, getting back to my initial comment, do I think Betts is going to be a Red Sox in 3 or 4 years? No, I don't. I think he's priced himself out of Boston. I think there's a team that is going to become so financially irresponsible that they will give him some crazy deal that I don't think the Red Sox are going to do. And if I'm speaking on behalf of Terry, I don't think they're going to do. I'm just saying that if there's one guy that's worth it, because I think he's better than Bryce Harper. I don't think there's any question that he's better than Manny Machado, especially marketability-wise, because Manny Machado is an absolute dirtbag. Mookie's a clean player, great image, great off the field, and so that, just a point of clarification. And do I take any of what I said back? No, because we got a great, great response out of Terry, in my opinion.
I mean, go back to 2013, and we do kind of live in a different world than we lived in only 5 years ago, but Mike Napoli, Shane Victorino, Johnny Gomes, those were perfect acquisitions when you consider the fact that we had Ortiz. That was Ellsbury's last year, but going into that season, we still look pretty good. Pedroia, still very good. Those were the perfect guys who could come in, do a bit of damage, and just kind of complement the rest of the roster. We're going to have Devers for a while. I'm a big Devers guy. I think he's going to be a force. We still got Benintendi for another 4 years. I think Bradley's going to be here. I know he's a Boris guy, but he's not going to command a huge haul being a career 240 guy, you know. So I think he's probably a long-term guy with the Red Sox. But I'm still not interested, you know. If Mookie was a free agent this year and we were losing him, go get Michael Brantley. Go get a Charlie Blackman type guy. Go get, I got the list. Oop, knocking my microphone over. I got the list up here. Go find another JD Martinez contract, for Christ's sakes. I mean, if Martinez was a free agent this year and Mookie was, give me Martinez. He's going to be more affordable. He's going to do just as much damage. It's been a big talking point all week long that he wasn't an MVP finalist. I'm all about fiscal responsibility. The one aspect of the team that I'm willing to spend more money on is actually pitching. You know, and I know Sale's coming up, and that's probably a topic for another show, but I'm going to be all in on Bumgarner because I feel that he's going to be healthy over the course of a full season. I don't trust Sale's durability at all, and I'll pay market value for a Madison Bumgarner guy to come in here with David Price. I'm assuming probably Rick Porcello, since he'll be affordable. Still have Rodriguez. Say what you want about him, but there's still some potential there. And then you can go get, you know, I hate to say Lance Lynn or Alex Cobb, but you can go get another solid, affordable, middle-of-the-rotation guy, you know, and have an extremely solid rotation. Bullpen guys are affordable. We could bring back Craig Kimbrell, but, I mean, he's trending downward, so we're just not going to do it. But though you gotta spread it out over the full team and have balance. And so I'm never gonna advocate for a $300 million player, at least for like the next 10 years. The luxury tax went from 197 to 206. So when that hits like 230, 240, then okay, a $30 million guy a year is probably the equivalence of a $20 or $22 million guy in today's value. So, and I mean, and just for shits, I mean, Manny Ramirez in 2001 got an 8-year, $160 million deal. That's a huge contract, you know, 18 years later coming into, you know, 2019. So I guess it's impossible to predict the market, but I'm always going to be, maybe that's the Republican in me, you know, and I'm a libertarian just for the record, but I just want it to be balanced, and we won three World Series at least, you know, without having a massive contract on the books, and I think that's the right way. I mean, the Cubs, they had Hayward, that's a stupid contract, but other than that, they had their one high-priced guy, John Lester, you know, and they won the World Series. Astros won it last year without any huge contracts, if you factor in, you know, they're only paying $20 million of Verlander's salary. So, well done there. You know, really smart front office. The Royals, I mean, who knows how the fuck they did it, but they did. And I don't know if we're going to see that again for the next 20 years, but whatever. The Giants haven't had, well, I guess they've been a top 5 or 6 payroll team, but you can be smart. Bryce Harper might never win a World Series. Mike Trout, if he stays in LA, might never win a World Series. And, you know, that's how I feel about it. And we're probably going to remain fairly far apart on that. But I just wanted to be clear on where I stood.
Well, I think you're very clear. Okay, a couple things. To be very clear, my first comment, and I'm going to re-listen to this podcast. My first comment was, I do think he's priced himself out of Boston. So I've already said that I don't think they're going to spend the money. My comment was that if there's one guy in baseball not named Mike Trout, this is the guy. Now, what I would love to see is Bryce Harper sign for 6 years, $185 million. Manny Machado signed for 5 years, $150 million. Because if that's what happens and the market corrects itself to reasonable dollars and the teams that are willing to get crazy stop getting crazy, then, you know, and again, as we sit here and record this podcast, we don't know. But there's a chance that the market dictates a much different result than what we're hypothetically discussing here. Because I don't think the Boston Red Sox will go to $300 million on anybody, even though if there's one guy to do it, it is Mookie Betts, and that's why I think there'll be a team that's crazy enough to do it. I'm just hopeful that starting with the JD deal, starting with some of the financially responsible decisions that Major League Baseball has done, you know, just across the board, team by team, in the last two off seasons, I do think they're at least attempting to make a market correction. So I'm hopeful that that's, you know, and you know, Liz, with all due respect, that doesn't change anything for the Devil Rays because they're not even going to spend in that range. Exactly. But it brings the Red Sox back into the realm with which what with which Terry is talking about, which is a financially responsible deal for a superstar, which, for example, what JD was, and Terry's going to eviscerate me if I'm wrong here, but I think it was 5 years, $150 million. So, and the other thing is, I have Mookie's contract situation up. His arbitration 2 year is this year. His arbitration 3 year is next year, and then he's an unrestricted free agent. He has expressed zero desire to buy out those arbitration years and sign a long-term deal now, which, again, is one of the reasons why I don't think ultimately the Red Sox will sign him long-term. But we still, the Red Sox still have full control of him for 2 years. And in 2020, if they're competitive, and I think we will be, he's not going anywhere. They're going to ride this type of talent through hopefully at least one more championship. And then he is that good where you're more apt, and if you're good, the Red Sox are good, and they're more apt to let him test free agency and see what happens. And hopefully at that time, there aren't any crazy teams. You know, I mean, one of the crazy teams, by the way, the Mets aren't crazy anymore. Some of these teams have learned from their past mistakes. The Cubs, you know, we talked about Chris Bryant and Terry just mentioned Haywood. I think there's going to be a correction where there's been so many bad, big-time contracts, long-term contracts that haven't worked out that teams are just not going to do them as much anymore. And I hope that that's what I'm clinging on to as far as hopefully Mookie Betts stays in Boston.
You could be right, but it won't be this year. Harper will get – it might be less. I mean, I think the market is shrinking by the day for Harper. I mean, there's only one one American League team that's even going to be in play for him, and the other three teams I think are in the, you know, are in the NL East. So that's not – you know, so Boris is still going to try to force – that big contract somehow. He's not ready to give in that, you know, the sport is evolving on how, you know, how they structure contracts. So so we'll just see how this season goes. And as far as Mookie, you know, not playing in Boston, I think it's really 50-50 at the moment. And it's 2 years away, but things can get kind of dicey, you know. I mean, If we're, you know, if we don't make the playoffs next year, or if we make the playoffs but we just suck and flounder, you know, that's not going to look great for Dombrowski. And then if we do the same exact thing in 2020, say we get into the ALDS, but, you know, we lose in, you know, four or five games, suddenly his seat's going to be getting a little hotter, and then maybe the pressure's on. Maybe he has to sign that franchise player, you know, to keep the fan base from crucifying him. Not that the Red Sox front office has ever really, you know, reacted much to, you know, the fan noise, so to speak, but it's a ways to go, and I think it is 50-50, and I'm definitely, you know where I stand. I'm not going to keep going there, but we'll see. And I'm really fascinated to see how this offseason plays out. If Harper only gets, say he gets $250 million, but, you know, the first 2 or 3 years are between 30 and 40 million, and then the opt-outs hit shortly after that, which is entirely reasonable, I think. Then maybe, you know, then maybe things look a little better, you know, in terms of signing Mookie. But there's, when you talk about market correction, it could happen 2, 3, 4 different ways, and it's, you know, it's still, you know, it's still wait and see, so.
There's way too much up in the air. I'm really interested to see what happens, too. I couldn't believe he turned down the Nationals deal. I feel like he's the face of the franchise and everything, and I would think he would want to keep that up because he has just as good a chance of winning a championship with them, you know, pretty much as he does, you know, almost anywhere that can afford him, at least as it sits right now. But it'll definitely be interesting, if nothing else. That's what I pretty much say that every year, being a Rays fan. It's like, I just never know what I'm walking into, you know, no matter what. So I'm forced to pay attention to a little bit of everything, I guess, in a way. But he's definitely he's an anomaly. Him and Machado, like, I don't know. I guess the last I saw, the Yankees were seriously interested in Machado, which will be interesting also, but to have him back over here. But we shall see. Only time can tell on so many things.
One of my favorite things that I've tweeted in a few different ways so far since we won is that, you know, the Red Sox didn't need Bryce Harper or Manny Machado to win this World Series. And in fact, we won it by beating Manny Machado. So, you know, that's, so I hope he gets a terrible contract, and I hope it handcuffs whatever team he goes to. And it could be the Yankees, because they do have a habit of overreacting every time the Red Sox win the World Series. And in 2014, it was Tanaka and Ellsbury that they signed right after we won it. And then in 2008, they signed Teixeira, which obviously worked okay at first because they won it in 2009. But that became an extremely painful contract, you know, by the time it ran up. So, you know, if the Yankees win a World Series, as much as that makes me want to throw up in my mouth, you know, in the next 2 years, but the next six are painful after that, fine. that's fine. So.
No, Terry, my favorite tweet that I've seen with you recently, I don't remember the exact wording, but it went something like, Kate Upton is going to be pissed that Justin Verlander isn't going to be the first pitcher to win the Cy Young and also have an AARP card or something along those lines. Yeah. I thought that was freaking hilarious.
That was yesterday.
Oh.
Yeah, so but. I think we've had an interesting show, and I think we can just about wrap, but any final thoughts, Jeremy? Did we lose Jeremy?
No, I don't know that I have any final thoughts, Terry. Okay. I think we've hit the highlights, you know, I look forward to the next one.
Alrighty. Any final thoughts, Liz?
That's pretty much it for me too. I think we went through everything, and I'm glad you guys feel the way you do about Cash. Like, honestly, because like I said before, you know, I'm definitely not a fan, but I definitely feel like he got gypped, and or maybe that's a horrible term I've recently heard to use. He got robbed. You know, of manager of the year. So hearing two Red Sox fans agree with me is pretty amazing. So thank you.
I'm trying to think of a team right now that's up and coming, you know, but they all have managers. Maybe Boone gets fired and then he goes to the Yankees and, you know, wins it all with them.
I don't think there's any question that Cash has set himself up to get the next job that has a budget behind it. And I don't know, you know, for Madden it was the Cubs, you know, for Core it was the Red Sox, for, you know, Auspice it was the Angels. I don't think that's a great situation, although Otani and Trout obviously present some positives, but I do think Cash has set himself up for that next contract. He's not going to go coach the A's. He's not going to go manage the Twins. But the next big, you know, the next opportunity where he's going to have $150 million to play with, I think he's that guy. I think he's just shown an incredible ability to win ball games with less and to be innovative. And, you know, I don't like to compliment the Double Rays because I think it's also a terrible program, and I think the ownership just doesn't support that team. And I think that's one. And I think that's one of the reasons why I'm so impressed by what Kevin Cash did. Also, side note, ex Red Sox, so a little bit brownie points there. Terry, love the podcast tonight. Really looking forward to the next one. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. We'll talk about it. It might be pushed to Monday if that works, because I'm gonna be in Connecticut for the bulk of Sunday. But we'll work that out off the air.
Liz, appreciate the opportunity to talk baseball with you. I both times we've done this, I've had a really good time, and I think you do provide an awesome perspective, not only just being from the Rays, but having been in the clubhouse as a reporter. So thank you as well.
Yeah, no, thank you guys for the opportunity, and I enjoy it. I definitely was happy to be back tonight. I'm sorry my schedule is a little bit weird. I have a lot of social things going on, which impedes lots of days, but I appreciate the time. Thank you.
Hey Terry, I hope my schedule becomes as busy as Liz's at some point with vacations. So
I only get 2 weeks a year, but
I got 6 or 7 next year. My company is very, very nice to me.
Hey Liz, keep your good times to yourself, please. Hey guys, I'm out of here. Yeah. Good night.
All right.
Bye.
Have a good night, guys. Bye.
Have a good night. All right. Finally, got the MLB awards out of the way. Winter meetings is kind of the next event, if you want to call it that. I think that might be the week after next. It's usually early December, after the Thanksgiving holiday. So a lot of things could happen during that week. That was when the Red Sox acquired Chris Sale. And I can't remember. Last year's market was so weird. I don't know how much happened last year, but definitely could, if not signings, you'll probably see some trades, if nothing else. So, have a good rest of your week. And if you're up here in the Northeast, stay safe because it is snowing. And we will be back in probably 4 or 5 days to do the next installment of the hot stove projection. So take care.
Wherever I roam, up and way home, that's where I long to be. I'm a member of the Red Sox Nation. It's a kind of insanity. Yeah, I live and die with Red Sox pride for eternity. I sleepwalk through the days when there's a West Coast swing. Married to the TV and the radio. For tickets in October, I'd give anything. Still paying Red Sox debts from long ago. I'm a member of the Red Sox Nation. It's a kind of a family. Wherever I roam, a Fenway home, that's where I long to be. I'm a member of the Red Sox Nation. It's a kind of insanity. Live and die with Red Sox pride for eternity. My mama told me bedtime tales about number 9. My dad taught me how Yastrzemski tracked down flies. Dirty Water, Tessie, and Sweet Caroline. Now I sing them to my kids as lullabies.
Lowe's knows how to help make your home holiday ready for less. Get Select Style Selections vinyl flooring for just $1.99 per square foot and have it installed before the festivities begin. Our team can help you every step of the way. See a Lowe's Red Vest associate or visit lowes.com/holiday install to get started. Lowe's, we help, you save. Basic install only. Date restrictions apply. Subject to availability. Install by independent contractor. See associate for details. Contiguous U.S. only.